Back into session, we're going to go on to item five, public requests. I'm going to do item B first, California Department of Fish and Wildlife. We have a presentation and an update on the Fall Creek Fish Hatchery from Mr. Bonham.
Yes, good morning, Chair.
Good morning.
Board members, let me just confirm you can hear me.
Yes.
And I am not able to take myself off video because of control on your side. So I'll just continue audio only at your pleasure.
Please.
But I'm able to come on video if that's better for you.
All right.
Okay. So I appreciate the opportunity to appear in the special public session. My name is Chuck Bonham, and I'm the director of the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. This is the second such session you've hosted, and I'm deeply appreciative you've created the space for me as director to hear public comments, take questions from you, and then follow up. So I'd like to focus in on Fall Creek Hatchery, but also at the end of my presentation, provide answers to some of the questions a few supervisors asked me in our last public discussion. So here's the big picture on Fall Creek Hatchery. I think most people know that Iron Gate Hatchery, which is at the base of Iron Gate Dam, was built in 1962 and has been in operation as a mitigation hatchery for the purpose of mitigating for the loss of habitat when the dams were constructed above Iron Gate Dam. And that facility at Iron Gate has been used to produce coho salmon, Chinook salmon, and steelhead. And that the state of California has been the contracted operator from Pacific Corps for that hatchery since inception, so the early 60s. But it's also the case, I think many people know, there has been a facility over on Fall Creek that has existed since about 1919. And it was built by the predecessor company, California Oregon Power Company, in 1919. At that time, as compensation for loss of spawning grounds due to the construction of COPCO 1 dam. And so it is an even older facility. Production there stopped, I believe, in 1948. At the time, it was operated by Fish and Game. Of course, we're now called Fish and Wildlife. So how do we get now from Iron Gate to Fall Creek when our department analyzed the dynamic around removal of dams and, of course, removal of Iron Gate Dam? The facts indicate, I think, clearly in an undisputed way, the hatchery that's now at Iron Gate Dam would lose its water supply, and kind of the cost, energy, capacity to figure out a water supply and operational dynamic for a hatchery when a dam may no longer be there was imprudent. So we took a look at Fall Creek and that it has existed with some physical footprint since 1919. And when you run that comparative analysis, it pretty clearly establishes Fall Creek's very proximate to the Klamath River. It's in a reach above Iron Gate Hatchery. It has access to water with suitable temperatures and water quality. There is an existing facility and structures from which you can kind of build within an existing footprint. And we see a pretty promising future using a new modernized asset at Fall Creek. And our projection, our commitment, kind of our aspirational view of that asset is to be able to raise and release up to about 3.25 million Chinook and about 750,000 coho salmon annually. And we're of a strong opinion this will allow the department to continue to support the tribal fisheries, the recreational sport fisheries, of course, which produce, you know, regional tourism and regional economy benefit, and also the commercial fisheries that are happening out in the ocean. We're confident that Fall Creek will continue to support levels of fish production with actually a higher success rate than Iron Gate, because the transition moves that future facility to better water supply and also just a better engineered conservation hatchery kind of density footprint. So to segue out of the general update, reminder that your staff earlier this morning clarified for you, Fall Creek is a Pacific Corps, not KRRC responsibility. Pacific Corps owns Fall Creek now. Pacific Corps' commitment is to continue to fund its operation for 8 years post-dam removal. The department has a contractual commitment with Pacific Corps at those end of 8 years to either extend the arrangement or kind of a, my words, right of first refusal for the department to acquire and take over operations. We see an operational dynamic at Fall Creek that's collaborative. You may know now, and this is one of the earlier supervisor's questions, we run Iron Gate now in an adaptive way. We're each year looking at disease risk, sea shasta in the river, and river conditions. We're often trying to release fish out of Iron Gate pulsed to a flow release to help them move downriver and defeat disease risk. Sometimes we've moved fish through trucks to a downstream release point. That adaptiveness in how we handle annual releases is something I would expect we carry forward at Fall Creek and would welcome, you know, county's technical staff involvement. So when one thinks about Fall Creek hatchery, at the construction dynamic, to expand a little bit from Chelsea's update, excavation has occurred at that footprint to allow for construction of the facilities to begin. Rock excavation is almost completed. Coho and Chinook, the salmon, the building construction is underway for those two kind of sub assets. The foundation has been completed for the Chinook building. Much of the required piping for the facility has been installed. Pre-engineered building materials are on site and are going to be going up in coming months. And work is kind of underway on the new raceways. And as a broad marker, from about now to 1 year from now, so in about 1 year from now, we would see all of this engineering design construction completed. So in April of next year. That's Fall Creek. Let me offer a suggestion on floodplain studies, which has been a hot topic this morning. I think this illustrates the value of you as a board having these listening and public sessions. It helps me hear concerns that are raised. I think it will help KRC. I'm sure Mr. Bransom has some response in his presentation that will follow. But the reality is at the mitigation fund level, it's a voluntary fund. No county or state or private entity can compel a private property owner to engage with the fund. It needs to be a voluntary dynamic. And from there, look, we know what the existing 100-year floodplain looks like. I don't think that's the issue raised. That should allow folks to understand which structures exist within the current identified area. it doesn't sound too difficult to also project what a future floodplain could look like. That's done through additional mapping or modeling. And then I think the goal should be to fund ability to work with interested landowners looking at current, potentially projected, and have that voluntary discussion. I'm thankful I could hear some of the criticisms. We'll take it offline. And I think that's an ongoing discussion point. A couple of topics that you asked for in the last meeting. You, in the last meeting, asked about what's called Parcel B properties. These are properties, acres, that Pacific Corps owns that aren't in the FERC boundary. And I think one thing that's contributed to a little bit of recent confusion has been this. There's something in state government called the Wildlife Conservation Board. It's actually within our department. It's effectively the real estate arm for the department. And it recently sent out letters to, I think, landowners in the proximate area, indicating at the Wildlife Conservation Board's upcoming meeting, which I believe is in May, the Wildlife Conservation Board will discuss, you know, the possibility of kind of tentatively approving what will be a future transaction. And that future transaction, a couple of years away, is when property will transfer by way of contract and settlement from Pacific Corps and then KRC to our department. And our department will take future acceptance of those properties as they kind of move from the corporation to the department. And the department, as y'all as board supervisors know, may then determine some of those properties could then get designated to an other entity. You asked me how the county could participate. I went and spoke with staff leading this process at the California Natural Resources Agency. And I think this would be a good topic for your staff to start talking about in the county meetings we're having with you. And that might be a good way to start getting your feedback on future disposition of these additional Pacific Corps properties. Issue number two, y'all asked me last time about sucker relocation. What this means is the ability for the resources agencies, us and our sister federal agency, to do netting operations in Iron Gate Reservoir and Copco Reservoir and relocate any suckers out of the reservoirs. So we're actually in the middle of that right now. We've had several nights of salvage work this week, and I think it runs through the end of this week. And the suckers we salvage will be transported up to the federal Lower Klamath Lake National Wildlife Refuge for relocation. And then the last question y'all had, I think, from Supervisor Halp was about Grayback Road. And the department has recently brought on board a permanent position. Michael Harris is his name, I think you've met him, to manage kind of all things Klamath for us, particularly our relationship with y'all. And with Michael, we're very able now and look forward to kind of reaching out to the Forest Service and raising concerns we have about ability to use that road for emergency kind of ingress, egress. So that's in our to-do list. Let me wrap up just by saying there's a lot going on, and I'm thankful for your leadership at the board level. You had some public commenters claiming you've failed to lead, and I actually see it the exact opposite. You've made your views known for years on all things Klamath restoration and river related. That continues to make a difference. As an example, in February of this year, February 16th, that Wildlife Conservation Board funded about 25 projects around the state, $51 million. One of the projects was to permit and design and complete restoration projects across 16 miles of the Mid-Klamath River, working with the Klamath Restoration Council. But also in February, a multi-million dollar fund was granted to the Montague Water Conservation District to line their canal and deal with water delivery inefficiencies because of the earthen canal. And at the time I was chair of the WCB, I'm vice chair now. Then in March of this year, our department granted about $22 million around the state for $22 million for 19 projects. One of them notably was about $500,000 of grant funding into the Scott River to the Scott River Watershed Council to continue the next level of Scott River monitoring of all things in the system on the fisheries front, which I know is often monitoring funding that's at risk of being canceled. And one of your questions in the last session with me involved public comment about frustration around monitoring, and I believe that was related to a contract we were seeking to enter into with the Resource Conservation District, and I'm pretty sure that contract has since been kind of removed from bottleneck and issued. And then finally, just a couple of weeks ago on April 13th, our department did another round of restoration granting across the state for about $36 million. And we actually, of that $36 million, dedicated $29 million to basically activity within your county. So we're funding 10 projects for about $20 million across the Shasta River and the Scott River in a variety of partnership relationships. For example, in the Shasta River, funding working through Montague Water Conservation District and property owners to implement conservation measures in safe harbor agreements for conservation of coho salmon. So riparian zone fencing, riparian buffers, improving alternative off-channel stock water systems. We are actually entering into a dynamic with the Siskiyou County Farm Bureau for about $3 million to help the Farm Bureau work with willing landowners in both the Scott and the Shasta to find ways to repair or create alternative stock water systems, improve surface water diversion efficiencies. In the Shasta River, working with landowners and partners around analyzing the upper Shasta system above Dwinnell Reservoir for conservation work. And on our department property in Big Springs, a little over $1 million to really advance something the county has consistently asked us to do, which is to look at using remote site incubators to supplement coho salmon populations in the Shasta River. Over in the Scott River, a really exciting collaboration between landowners, irrigators, Yurok Tribe, California Trout, Scott River Water Trust, to see if we can redesign some of that larger diversion infrastructure that gets better on-farm water utilization and increased water use efficiency, but also facilitates perhaps improved in-stream flow at key times of year. And then in addition, because the need is so dire and I've heard from you at the county, we've also included in this about $1 million to your county staff as a project to deal with analyzing the groundwater recharge ability, working with Scott Valley Irrigation District and ditch infiltration. And then finally, we have decided to fund about $9 million of work to deal with all of the post-McKinney fire sediment and debris load and debris removal challenge coming out of that catastrophic wildfire impact, particularly as it risks salmon recovery. So thanks for letting me show up again. That's a little bit on Fall Creek Hatchery. That's a suggestion on the floodplain issue. That's answering some of the questions you raised in our last meeting. And it's ending with a quick summary of some of the collaboration going on within the county that I think will not be random acts of conservation. And particularly that last round of funding is broadly supported by your landowners, the tribes in the county, and conservation organizations. Let me pause there and see if you have any questions.
I'm sure we do, Director Bonham. Supervisor Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bonham, appreciate you answering the questions from last time, too. It's nice of you to remember those and look into them. The question I have one is a follow-up on the suckerfish.
Yes.
They're being hauled to Laura Klamath Refuge?
Yes.
And then I was just wondering, do you have is there a white paper or a document kind of laying out the plan for how that's going to be done and monitored and taken care of on the refuge?
Yes. I don't have it at my fingertips, but let us take that as a question I'll answer not later than when I come back to the next session, if not sooner.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, if you have that, so I know the refuge was dried up last year, so I know there'd be plans for dealing with that.
Yep.
And then that was my one follow-up question. Thank you.
Supervisor Arbor?
I appreciate you following up on my concerns with fish release into the river on after dam removal or during dam removal. If you're going to utilize trucks and flow pulsing, do you have any idea how far down the river you would take those fish to release once there's sediment in the river? I'm just curious. I don't mean to put you on the spot. I'm just kind of curious how far down into the river system you would take those fingerlings.
Great question. Doesn't put me on the spot. That's kind of part of my job in the 58 counties around the state on a whole bunch of issues. When I mention utilizing trucks or flow pulsing, that's an option. Neither is an option we use every year. Sometimes one or both becomes an option in a given year. And Supervisor, that's really where I'd start my answer. The whole point is when you are annually working through how to do your fish releases, we want to be collaborating with technical experts, tribes, affected recreational and commercial fishers, and federal agencies, but expand that also. I really think our relationship with your staff at the county is improving, and we would benefit from their involvement. I can get back to you on, in the last couple of years, when we've moved fish downstream, where we have used release sites, because those are known, discussed, so we can follow up with you and get you the exact sites. And we will have potential release options post-dam removal and during that period, kind of tailored to when water quality is optimal or suitable, using modeling that can track pulse sediment events, including tracking sediment events for when, after the event, there's reduced suspended sediment. And you can kind of design a potential trucking release site set of options around that information. We'd be glad to engage with Elizabeth, but also follow back up with you with the specific release site options.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Anything else? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Supervisor
Tasha? Good morning, Director. Just a couple of quick questions. One on Fall Creek. Will there be, a dialogue or policy discussed on by the department and, I guess, potentially NIMS with regard to establishing a a number, a cutoff or returning number of spawners in the system that helps to bear out that, you know, in the time that I've been on the board, dam removal was, you know, going to open the door to restored fisheries. But what I'm after is there an end goal here that, you know, once that's happening, will the department and the federal agency be discussing some kind of end goal with regard to and returning adults?
Let me take that question and first talk about what I think might be more important than, quote, a so-called end goal. I think that there will be several moments, and it should begin now, not later, where our department wants to be working with our sister federal agency, the National Marine Fisheries Service, wants to be working with tribes, and wants to be working with the county to create kind of the reintroduction plan, the reintroduction strategy for these fisheries in what will be, you know, habitat above Iron Gate Dam. We need to do that, and we need to do it in a way that kind of is transparent and gives an opportunity for people to understand and offer input. And as we go through, second point, the 8 years of, you know, operating Fall Creek Hatchery, each of those 8 years, we would be working on a kind of an annual dynamic about hatchery production. And that necessarily requires us to kind of talk about metrics of number of fish produced and what our targets are. And I would expect we're kind of open about those numbers, working with y'all, NIFs and tribes, commercial recreational anglers. So I actually think your question also is about what we're doing together from 2023, you know, through those 8 years. And then picking up your question about ultimate goal, I do think there's a way to articulate goals that are about successful reintroduction and establishment of fisheries. And I think that's also going to involve what are the trajectories of production at Fall Creek and how does that relate to natural reestablishment. Today, Supervisor, I couldn't tell you what number that might be to indicate success or failure.
Yep.
I also think we should really try to be both qualitative, defining success, and quantitative. Quantitative is important, but it's also imprudent to pick some number that becomes this thing people fight about. If you're one below, you fail. If you're one above, you succeed. So I see this as a combination of quantitative and qualitative metrics.
Okay. Want to congratulate you and your department on the hiring of Michael Harris. We're very pleased with that position and what he's filling there. And then also can't express enough support for, I know it's not eyed egg in the form that we've proposed, but it's similar, and that is a project on the Big Springs Ranch that obviously we've been working on with your department and NIMS for years, and to see it bear fruit finally, we're very encouraged, so thank you.
Yep. Sorry it took so long.
Supervisor Howe.
Good morning. Thank you. I appreciate you following up on the Grayback Road. I have another question, and then I'll get back to the Grayback Road. One of the things that we did with the reintroduction of salmon above Shasta Lake is there was a designation of it being an experimental population. I'm interested to see if there's any thought or any way of entertaining experimental population above these dams once they're out, because as you well know, historic practices for agriculture will likely change under full ESA engagement by the federal entities, but also those entities and the permitting process often stop us from doing critical work, has been experienced in most of our rivers around here. So I just throw that out there, Director Baum, as a question. I guess you don't have to answer me now, but maybe if you get back to us on that one.
I do have one thing I'd like to say in response to your question, and as you know and I know, this idea or this phrase experimental population is a term of art within certain state and federal laws. And I hear you. You and I have been around a lot of these issues a long time, that regulators, of which my department is one, can also often kind of unnecessarily produce a no good deed goes unpunished dynamic for landowners and water users. I get that. Here's my comment. One of the things I'm really focused on right now personally is trying to better understand the existing landowner, water user infrastructure, and I'll just say, let's say from Iron Gate Dam up the system, and then trying to think about public funding opportunities to basically deal with unscreened diversions and other things and create a world where landowners and water users, you know, Iron Gate up, don't face an additional exposure because these fish are coming back naturally. And I know it's a legitimate, significant issue and concern, and I think it needs to be dealt with. So I appreciate your question.
I appreciate your response. You're right. We've been around a long time, and I've also seen many times with ESA work that we meet all the requirements but miss the goal of actually recovering a species. So that's critically important to me, and I know it's critically important to the landowners. And with something, some talk along that line, it reassures people to be able to cooperate rather than fight against something that jeopardizes their existence. So I appreciate that. Getting back to the Grayback Road, to fill you in, I met with Supervisor of Rogue River, Merv George, last week. And I've worked with Merv probably 35 years. He also understands how critical the Grayback Road is for transportation from between Willow Creek and probably Syat as being the only feasible way to get into Oregon. As a result of our conversation, he's also interested in some kind of a easement transfer to an entity that would actually maintain the road. And at this point, because it does bridge across two states, I would be looking probably at the state highway system, if that helps. But I encourage you to keep engaged with me on that, and any way I can help facilitate that, let me know.
Thanks for the update, Supervisor.
Anything else? Just one thing, and this is probably more in general. Director Bonham, you know what I would like, and I would put this on staff too, I want to know how much money is pouring into this county, how much money we've spent. I think it's unfair when we talk about, you know, and I'm going to use Director Bonham's measure, you know, one below or failure, one above or, you know, type of scenario. I think people have to realize what is being spent in this, on both sides of the equation. Because at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, was it spent correctly? Was it utilized? What was the return, and was it effective?
To me, it's like building, putting a road out there somewhere that doesn't get used down the line. Was that the wisest use of money, so to speak? Because at the end of the day, people want, one, I want transparency, but I also want thoughts and ideas of what we did right or wrong. Because moving forward, there's going to be more projects, there's going to be more issues. They don't go away. And so I think it's just fair for the public to be transparent about collectively what's been spent on this so far. With that, Mr. Bonham, I don't see any more questions from the board. Thank you. I hope you could stick around for the next presentation. Wendy,
yes.
I'm going to go to you. Do you want to take your 5 minutes now, or you want to take it? So maybe I can get KRRC to take a break somewhere in the middle.
I'm thinking as we get close to 11, because that's when air pollution is supposed to be meeting, so we may need
that.
To take that.
We're going to go to about 11-ish, and then we'll so KRRC
see how things
come
go.
Up in item A. Klamath River Renewal Corporation, we'll start the process, and we'll, if you think about 11:05 break time, then we'll continue on.
Good morning. Mark Ransom, KRRC. Chairman Valenzuela, Supervisor, we want to thank you for the opportunity to be here today to provide you with an update on the Lower Klamath Project. Project schedule, current activities, regulatory compliance update, and the like, and then stand for questions. Are you able to run the presentation for me this morning? We've got a presentation, as was mentioned before. I'm joined today by Mort McMillan from McMillan Corporation and Diane Barr from Camas, who will provide a construction overview, an update, and a regulatory overview and update, respectively. I'd like to just start with a little bit of a general overview. This presentation, I understand, is in your packet, and I assume will also be available on the county's Lower Klamath Project website. We can also post this on the Renewal Corporation website if desired. We go ahead and advance to the next slide, please. So, introduction's done. Again, just a quick overview of the project and where we are, and a regulatory overview with questions and answers at your discretion to follow. Just a quick reminder, the Lower Klamath Project, the Renewal Corporation, is the licensee, the principal licensee, along with co-licensees, the states of California and Oregon. McMillan Corporation is the owner's representative, overseeing the construction work of our dam removal contractor, Kiewit, and our restoration contractor, Resource Environmental Solutions, RES. Diane Barr and Camas are our regulatory consultant and working closely with Mort and McMillan and the Renewal Corporation. There are actions by others. Director Bonham indicated that the Fall Creek Hatchery is a Pacific Corp responsibility, related in broad terms to the Lower Klamath decommissioning, but a separate and distinct project, as is the Climate Mitigation Fund, independent of the Renewal Corporation. Next slide, please. So just some key project elements that I'd like to touch on, and then I'll turn it over to Mort. Again, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is the regulatory entity with oversight authority. As co-licensees, the Renewal Corporation, California, and Oregon are implementing an order. And that order contains hundreds and hundreds of terms and conditions, thousands and thousands of pages of management plan, dam safety requirements, biological, cultural, and other requirements that we are adhering to. And that implementation of that order is our fundamental and sole charge. Pacific Corp did transfer all the lands and facilities to the Renewal Corporation in December of 2022. So we are acting as the landowner and as the principal co-licensee. This is an opportunity, I think, to make a couple of clarifications from some of the earlier comments and questions. As the landowner, the Renewal Corporation has made a determination on the basis of public safety, concurring with county findings, that we have additional traffic, we have need to impose safety requirements, including reduced construction zone speed limits, and other things, that we will do an early closure of the majority of the recreation sites that are part of the Lower Klamath Hydroelectric Project. We're not making a request of anyone to do that. We are simply notifying the public and other entities of those closures in the interest of public safety. There is an operation and maintenance agreement between the Renewal Corporation and Pacific Corp that provides for Pacific Corp to continue to operate the facilities for power production until a determined facilities termination date. And so in cooperation with Pacific Corp and the Renewal Corporation, as we approach the schedule for the drawdown of the reservoirs, Pacific Corp will terminate power operations and demobilize from the site. The Renewal Corporation's current schedule is that beginning in early January of 2024, we will initiate the drawdown of the reservoirs at J.C. Boyle in Oregon, COPCO number 1, and Iron Gate. Reservoir drawdown and dam removal will take place generally in a simultaneous condition. That is, the drawdown of the three big reservoirs, Boyle, COPCO 1, and Iron Gate, will occur simultaneously between January and roughly the end of March. We will take a pause in April. We'll allow spring runoff to do a partial refill of the reservoirs, and then we will finalize the drawdown of the reservoirs in the May, early June timeframe, depending on how much inflow we get during the spring runoff period. At the conclusion of that drawdown period, then, the removal of those three dams will take place generally simultaneously, roughly between June of 2024 and October of 2024. Pacific Corp and CDFW will support the operations of Fall Creek Hatchery. Director Bonham discussed that in significant detail. And then lastly, I just want to point out that, again, in December of last year, the Renewal Corporation did sign all of the property conveyance instruments and became the land owner. The lands will be transferred to the states of California and Oregon or the state's third-party designee at the conclusion of the project. This is a condition that was laid out in the amended Klamath Hydroelectric settlement agreement that those lands will be transferred. So the Renewal Corporation did receive a number of inquiries from private property owners about the Wildlife Conservation Board letter, and again the director did comment on that about the potential for the acquisition of some of the properties. Those properties are currently held by the Renewal Corporation, and the settlement agreement does condition that those properties will be transferred. And so the Conservation Board is in the process of just informing private property owners, and will hold a public meeting, I believe it's May 25th, for purposes of explaining exactly what private property owners and neighbors can anticipate with regard to that property transfer under the contracts alluded to by Director Bonham. With that, I'm going to conclude my remarks, invite Mort McMillan to come up, followed by Diane Barr, and then we'll regroup here to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mark. Supervisor, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Mort McMillan. I'm with McMillan Corporation. As Mark indicated, my role is the owner's rep, responsible for the management of the construction teams that will be working out on the project over the next few years. So I can jump to the next slide. One more. I'm just going to do a high-level overview of the sequence that we'll be using over the next couple of years to remove the dams and then do the reservoir restoration. What this illustration is showing you is the four dams. J.C. Boyle is up in Oregon, obviously, but we have COPCO 1, COPCO 2, and Iron Gate that are here in California that we'll be removing. If you go to the next slide. This gives you the timeline. So 2022 is when we finish the permitting and deferred regulatory process, as Mark had indicated. Our 2023 is what we call the pre-drawdown period. And what we're doing is basically getting ready for the drawdown. So we're doing a low-level added at COPCO number 1, which is basically a 10-foot diameter tunnel go up near the face of the dam. We're going to take COPCO number 2 completely out this year. At Iron Gate, we're doing some modifications to the outlet tunnel to get us ready for releasing flow through the original outlet tunnel and diversion tunnel that were there when they built the dam. We're also doing a lot of basically what I call site improvements. We're relocating the City of Wairega pipeline We're building a new Daggett Bridge, which the pipeline will be routed across. We're doing improvements at Fall Creek Culvert, and that's to provide better fish passage for the fish returning to Fall Creek Hatchery that Chuck talked about. We also have a lot of just site improvements. We're building a work camp that we're coordinating with the county on at Kapa Number 2 Village. We're demoing some existing structures that are there, doing some has material abatement, and getting basically ready for us to start to draw down, which will be in January. 2024 is the drawdown. As I mentioned, Kapa Number 2 Dam will be removed this year. So we'll basically be pulling down the reservoirs at Kapa 1, Kapa in the Iron Gate, as well as J.C. Boyle all at the same time, and then moving the sediment through and out to the ocean at that time. All those dams will come out in 2024, and the channel restoration will be complete. So we'll have volitional passage that goes basically from below Iron Gate to above the current J.C. Boyle dam and reservoir. In 2025, we have the final restoration of the reservoirs, which RES will be doing. So that's the final grading, final planting. And then we go on basically a multi-year, what we call monitoring and maintenance period, that RES will be responsible for. And there are performance requirements related to the planting and basically maintenance of those facilities that will be done. We also have water quality monitoring that goes on through the majority of that period as well to meet our requirements for our permit conditions from the state and from the federal government. And then basically in 2030 is when we anticipate everything's done, signed off on by FERC, and FERC releases the final license at that point. Next slide. This kind of gives you the illustration of what will happen in 2024. We're basically, as I mentioned, Kapa 2 is out, so we have J.C. Boyle, Kapa 1, and Iron Gate. We basically will go down to our minimum operating pool. We have what we call facility power termination, and what that means is we basically go and we shut the flow off into the power generation facilities, we turn the power off, and at that point, PacifiCorp is no longer our operating subcontractor, so PacifiCorp's role will end at that point. We open those low-level outlets, and we basically go into our reservoir drawdown. That occurs, as Mark mentioned, from January through about March. And depending on what the snowpack looks like, and we'll get some freshet to semi-refill the reservoirs. They'll come down in June, and then we'll start the actual dam removal. In advance of that, we'll be doing things at the powerhouses. For example, we have some lead paint abatement we'll be doing in the powerhouses. We'll be taking the equipment out. Some of it will be salvaged. We'll be getting ready for the final demo of those powerhouses during that, you know, basically January through March time frame. The dams all come out in the summertime, and by October, we'll begin putting the final channel restoration in, our repairing areas down along the channel where the footprints of the dams used to be, and then basically we're done out in the late October, first part of November with the Kiewit contract and the RES contract within the channel themselves. So restoration is basically done, dam removal is done at that point. Next slide. This is Diane's slide. I did want to answer one question that was asked about emergency action planning. The way our contract is set up with PacifiCorp this year, we're operating under their existing emergency action plans. So any notification that occurs, if there's an accident on Kapa Road, we have an accident, that notification process has been well established for years. We'll go into place, we'll notify all of the Sheriff's Department, the county resources, the state resources. As the operator, the Renewal Corporation, if we come upon an accident along our road, we will immediately put our emergency action plan in place, notify the authorities, get help out there as part of our authorization. This fall, we will shift into the Renewal Corporation's Emergency Action Plan, which is patterned after the same one that PacifiCorp has been using for years, and that will be run under our program starting in January. So all of that will be maintained as we go through this process in terms of how we respond to emergencies of our own, if we have a construction accident, or if there's somebody along the road that needs help.
Just to follow up on that, or one concern I have too, is say a resident cop who calls 911 for whatever condition it happens to be, that, you know, there's no hindrance on access for the ambulance to make it up there.
Yeah, absolutely. We are set to make sure the roads are clear and that we have access to come through. And our work activities, as we get, we have a couple of culverts that will occur in 2025. most of our work activities are within the boundaries of the existing structures. It's the traffic going up and down is what we're, what, the reason we're closing the recreation area, just the sheer number of cars and trucks are going up. But the roads will be kept open.
Right, and then another concern too, there's a fire up there, there's one volunteer fire department up there. There's a lot of resources have to travel a long ways along that road to use their assistance.
As part of our overall regulatory process, we actually have a fire management plan where we are set up to be able to respond to fires. We have to have fire equipment on site as part of our overall planning access. So we will respond as part of our team working with the state resources and local resources.
Thank you for answering that question.
You bet. Diane?
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, supervisors, for letting me present today. So this is a somewhat complex slide, but what it walks us through is the regulatory authority of the different entities as part of a FERC process. And so on the left-hand side in the upper gray box, you'll see that the FERC is at the top with the surrender order conditions. And as Mark referenced, there's thousands of them, because while the surrender order itself wasn't very long, it referenced approximately over 40 management plans and multiple permits. So what's in that box underneath that is all the federal permits that are required as part of a FERC process. And as we talked about earlier in the dam footprints and their reservoirs, those are all regulated by FERC. And with that, when you do a dam removal, you actually still have to walk through all of the other federal proceedings, which is NEPA, endangered species, cultural resources, EPA. There was a reference to a letter that was distributed in terms of the sediment that's in the reservoirs themselves and its harmful considerations. That was part of it. There's a 401 Clean Water Act, as well as which this, you know, if this project wasn't complicated enough, we are crossing two states. So we have two of those certificates, as well as drinking water concerns, groundwater, things like that. As Mark mentioned, that we've done some hazardous materials abatement. That's all part of it. These are old houses, old dams, old facilities. And with that, the regulations have changed over time, and we have to make sure we abide by all those rules as part of decommissioning. And the box that's below that in the dotted line and that's light blue, those are actually state permits that we had to get that were originally federally enacted. So the way it often works in states take the lead role on certain permits, even though it's under the Federal Power Act. So under the Federal Power Act, we have to comply with all federal rules and laws. Well, some of those have been delegated down to the states. So those are listed in both California and Oregon. So while we're pulling state permits, it's really we're pulling federal permits. It's just the state has the authority over them. And then over on the right-hand side is what we call our good neighbor coordination. Under the Federal Power Act, it's the federal permits that we are required to get, and anything outside of that is preempted. So there's always questions of, do we have to get county permits? Do we have to get other local permits? They're under good neighbor coordination. And so what the Renewal Corporation did is they established MOUs with different counties, and you'll see it there at Siskiyou, Klamath, as well as Del Norte. As well as we also have MOUs with the states, because the states have rules and regulations that under the Federal Power Act actually are not applicable in this action. So instead we entered into MOUs with them so we could still represent their interests, but under a different legal agreement instead of a permit. It can get pretty confusing. The Federal Power Act is very old, and but with that, it's pretty established in enforcing the preemption. So the best we felt in order to support the good neighbor coordination was to enter into private or legal agreements with the respective counties, and Chelsea and Elizabeth referenced the Siskiyou County one, which really addresses roads and bridges, and Del Norte has to deal with some conditions out in the estuary as the sediment is released, and Klamath is again more about roads and bridges and just access within Klamath County. One other question that came up was about the rec sites and who owns the rec sites and are they, you know, public, private, and Mark's going to talk about that in just a second, but all of those are under what we would call the FERC jurisdiction, And so, as we referenced before, we accelerated that schedule and we notified FERC of that acceleration. So the next slide is going to deal with the rec site closure. Mark's going to walk through that and the public safety piece and give some representative examples. I'll just give a quick update. This is about compliance, and Mort is the, as McMillan is the owner's rep, he is the on-site compliance representative. His team, and his team oversees other teams, and it's a dedicated force on-site to make sure all the environmental commitments are upheld. And with that, there's monitors, tribal monitors, compliance managers, et cetera. So while it was over 55 permits that were acquired, it's their team responsibility to make sure that they're all being followed. Thanks.
If you can jump to the next slide, please. So as part of our plans, as Diane mentioned, there's a number of plans that we have to prepare and submit to FERC, dam safety plans, there's temporary construction surveillance monitoring plans. There's also a public safety plan that we submit. There's one that's specific to pre-drawdown, one for drawdown, and one post-drawdown. Within that, it's required by FERC to prepare that plan. And the recreation site closures were identified in that. It's also a dynamic document from the standpoint as we see conditions occurring in the field, we are required to respond to those. So when we see the traffic, we start seeing potential for safety issues to the public, we need to respond to that. We made a decision to close those recreation sites because of the amount of traffic we have, which will be increasing as we go into the removal of COPCO number two, get more work going on COPCO one, and then start our work in Iron Gate. And that's all part of that public safety plan. I just wanted to explain that those are decisions we make in order to be in compliance with FERC. I already talked about some emergency action plans and coordination. Those are in full force and will continue to be all the way through our process. And those are coordinated with the county staff, state staff, and all those emergency response groups, very similar to what you've seen in the past. We will be setting up, Pacific Corps just did a dry run with one that's in place this year for the Renewal Corporation's emergency action plan that will be in place in September. We're going to be doing dry runs with the county staff at that point and run through that to get ourselves up for our January drawdown periods. So that's basically the third bullet there. Controlled dam flow releases, the flow flush that was put out, that was a Bureau of Reclamation action. That was not a Renewal Corporation action. The Bureau is responsible for the public notification of that. For our activities as we go into drawdown, we will be notifying the public, notifying the county in advance. In fact, we're working with Chelsea and Ollie on that now to get started that process, so you'll know before we start pulling the reservoirs down, for example, well in advance and where we're going to start that, the flow releases that we're looking at, those type of things. So that'll be part of our PR program and part of our notification to the downstream users as well as everybody around the lakes and to the county. There's multi-engineering oversight on the project. It's a FERC-licensed project, so all the dam safety requirements are managed by FERC and overseen by FERC. It's also overseen by the Department of Safety of Dams for the state of California. So we had to get approval from DSOD as well as FERC for the activities that we'll be doing at the dams for pre-drawdown and for how the dams are coming out. I just wanted to point that out. And DSOD will be on site doing inspection as we do those activities as well from a regulatory standpoint. And then basically the last part I want to talk about is there's a lot of questions about the sediment loads that will be coming out of the dam. There's a lot of analysis that's been done on it going back 20 years. And there's some documents that have been produced, but the actual sediment that we are releasing is actually less than the total sediment that goes out to Klamath Basin on an annual basis. And we'll be monitoring that through our water quality stations. Diane made reference to the Del Norte MOU. We're actually putting in basically flow monitoring equipment at the mouth of the Klamath so we can see what direction the sediment's going. The issue is, you know, are we going to have sediment accumulation up in the harbor in Weston City? So a lot of work's been put into that. I did want to point that out as we go through this process. There's been a lot of analysis on that, and those documents are available through the environmental analysis. Next slide. I already talked about the recreation site closure. I know that's not, you know, a popular decision, but it's something we need to do as a renewal corporation to maintain public safety. There'll be other things that will be coming up as we move farther into the drawdown as far as, you know, protecting the public, security to make sure our whole goal is that we don't have people getting in a situation where they get hurt. And as I mentioned before, it's dynamic. So as we see things occurring that we didn't anticipate, we're going to adjust that plan and be able to make sure we're on top of everything that comes up. You just never know what might come up as we go forward. The signage plan that we're putting together and working with the county as part of that, we saw a need for additional signage. We've got some additional details we're providing. Hopefully get that submitted this week. That's part of that public safety plan to make sure we've got the right speed limits, we've got the right notifications where our trucks are coming in. And then things like the cultural identifications, we've got cultural sites that are going to be that we're dealing with. So all of that's part of our overall plan.
Are we in a good spot where we could take a break? Because my clerk needs
sure.
Five of these.
I think that's about the last one.
Okay. We'll finish up when we get. Let's take five, Wendy, for your benefit.